Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Desai and I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, the Liverpool International Theatre Festival hits the mark and troops from around the world make their way back with a smile. After admiring his work for decades, local New Brunswick artist Robert Lyon gets to work on a famous Alex Colville painting.
Actually, here I am building a frame for an Alex Colville original, the stuff that I looked up to as a kid and everything. Like, Colville made his own frames at the time, and he was very specific. A frame really is an extension of the work.
In British Columbia, the Clahoose First Nation eyes expansion for its tourism businesses after a successful summer season.
We were busy at the Gorge, and we expected to be, I think, coming out of COVID, very busy, and all of our hard accommodation was virtually full the whole time.
The Hartley Bay community in Terrace, BC is celebrating the grand opening of a new community kitchen.
The Gitgat community actually came to us with this project, saying that it was a priority for their community. So we were happy to work with them to understand how the Community Investment Fund might be able to support this project, and we felt it was a good fit as it focused on food security, sustainability, cultural education and knowledge transfer for their community members.
And through our Periscope, we briefly traveled to Kingston, Ontario, Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Cortes Island, BC. Welcome to Viewpoints.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Our first stop today is at the South Shore of Nova Scotia, where Ed Halverson takes us to the Liverpool International Theatre Festival. It's still a crowd pleaser even after a four-year absence, partly due to past COVID-19 restrictions. Organizers of the 2022 Liverpool International Theatre Festival are hailing the event as a great success. Seven troupes from around the world perform at the event. More on this with Ed Halverson.
Over the weekend, audiences enjoyed performances by seven troupes from around the world. Festival chairperson Jean Robinson-Dexter says from the outset, the community rallied behind the event.
Opening night and having the block party and the sunset market on Main Street in front of the theater, the Town Hall Arts and Culture Center, that was the work of our South Queens Chamber of Commerce and just gave a totally different kind of kickoff to the festival, but really engaged the community, and folks are still talking about what a good time they had that evening.
Adjudicator Paul Fowler had a tough job to determine how to allocate the awards, but in the end named the Italian Movie Factory, performed by Avanzi Decina Cultural Association, as the outstanding international production. Robinson-Dexter says it's an unenviable task to be the one judging such unique talents.
My gosh, what a difficult experience it must have been for him, because the plays were so different. And again, as he said, it's subjective. Folks may not agree with the choices that he made, but those were his choices on that day. And I would say he got it pretty correct in terms of the choices and the awards that were presented on Sunday night.
The festival didn't go off without some adversity. Three of the scheduled 10 troops booked to perform couldn't get into Canada due to visa issues. Robinson-Dexter says it's something they will need to keep in mind for the 2024 edition.
I guess it's the way of the world now in terms of folks getting visas to come to Canada, so that'll certainly be something that we'll be looking at.
Robinson-Dexter says the Liverpool International Theatre Festival team will take some time to review what went well, what could be improved upon, and what changes they would like to see from this year as they begin to make plans for the next festival in 2024. I'm Ed Halverson.
From Nova Scotia to British Columbia, where we visit Hartley Bay, a small community on the water in Terrace, BC, Hartley Bay is celebrating the opening of its new community kitchen with the Prince Rupert Port Authority. The community kitchen was completed with the help of the Prince Rupert Port Authority Community Investment Fund. It got $78,000 from the fund to put in stainless steel countertops, dehydrators, and industrial-sized freezers. The upgrades are meant to help facilitate cultural practices like a feast and harvesting season events. A community smokehouse is also in the works. This story by Morgan Budden in Terrace, British Columbia.
Hartley Bay has just celebrated the grand opening of their new community kitchen with the Prince Rupert Port Authority. The Gitgat Nation received funding from the Port Authority through their Community Investment Fund. Manager of Community Relations for the Port Authority, Brittany Pedersen, explained how they came to work with the Gitgat Nation.
The Gitgat community actually came to us with this project, saying that it was a priority for their community. So we were happy to work with them to understand how the Community Investment Fund might be able to support this project. And we felt it was a good fit as it focused on food security, sustainability, cultural education, and knowledge transfer for their community members.
Band manager for the Gitgat Nation in Hartley Bay, Teresa Robinson, explained how the upgrades to the kitchen are meant to help provide a space for cultural practices.
Right now we're going into hunting season. So we have a couple of families who came home with their harvesting last weekend, and the space is nice enough and easy to clean for them to work on large quantities. And we have a large freezer where we hope to freeze things, and then they can pack it home once it's all frozen. There's also a dehydrator in the setup. There's also vacuoline options and preserving kettles, so prepared for any quantity of a family who needs the space to work in.
Robinson described why it was important that the community was able to gather with members of the Port Authority to celebrate the new upgrades.
Since we finished the kitchen, we've been trying to coordinate some sort of opening or an event where the port can come into Hartley Bay. So we've tried a couple of times, then the community shut down. So now we are officially, when they came to visit a couple of weeks ago, we're able to have a community gathering. Everyone enjoyed. It was a small space. It's a small space in the lobby where we set up tables and stuff. And so we were pretty pleased to be able to get together. And we haven't been able to have an event like that for a long time, where we can get together and have hamburgers and enjoy each other's company.
Robinson says that the application process for the fund was simple and explained a plan that they currently have in the works for another community space.
We're on the waterfront. Our next proposal, which they're intrigued and want to know more, is a community smokehouse, one where you're also doing sort of like preserving and butchering and cutting up of your harvest and properly pressure cooking it, properly freeze drying it, and all of that in one location, but also having the ability to smoke and to use like a smokehouse setting. Some families have smokehouses here, but not one in a community scale where you can do larger quantities.
In total, the Port Authority provided over $78,000 for the upgrades to the kitchen. This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story on canada-info.ca.
And we stay in British Columbia, where the Clahoose First Nation is eyeing expansion for its tourism businesses after a successful summer season. The Katsan Wagush Management Corporation is the business arm of the Clahoose First Nation on Cortis Island. It operates two tourism-oriented businesses, the Clahoose Wilderness Lodge in Toba Inlet, as well as the Gorge Harbor Marina Resort on Cortis Island off the BC coast. The Wilderness Lodge was purchased by Katsan Wagush in 2020 and the Gorge Resort in 2021. General Manager Jason Johnson, who assumed the position this past summer, is very pleased with how the busy season went at both properties. The installations were very popular with international tourists looking for an unusual experience and with locals as well. Jason Johnson has a lot of expansion ideas. Here's Greg Osoba.
Katsan Wagush, or QXMC, is the business arm of the Clahoose First Nation on Cortez Island. It purchased the Gorge Harbor Marina Resort last fall and a wilderness resort in Toba Inlet the year before. General Manager Jason Johnson came on board this past summer after management challenges at the Gorge were needed following a rough start to the busy season. He's pleased with how both the Gorge and Wilderness Resort performed over the summer months, and is already carrying out expansion plans.
I can tell you it's been a very successful year. We were busy at the Gorge, and we expected to be. I think coming out of COVID, people were anxious to get back out there. And some unfortunate news at the Gorge, where we closed the restaurant 2 weeks 2 weeks early, and we did so out of need, but past that, very busy, and all of our hard accommodation was virtually full the whole time. Those people trying to get a reservation at the restaurant, often frustrated because there's only a certain number of seats in there, but we are taking a look at how to address that. In terms of Clahoose Wilderness Resort, very great season there as well. There's a lot of nights that were completely sold out. We are building that business. It's what, I guess, year two for that one, and we call it year one because the first year was figuring things out and a bit of transition there, and we continue to do that as a new business. Lots of great feedback, but certainly some feedback that tells us that we're going to build out some more programming for next year. That's one that gets busier as the gorge kind of winds down, so they're still in season over there because the grizzly bears are out, and our grizzly bear tours business has also grown exponentially and can continue to do so with some more investment into that property, but very busy all the way around, and people attended our sites via bringing their RV up to the gorge or traveling to us by boat through the marina and Clahoose Wilderness Resort for the 3-day or 4-day tour. So all the way around, a good season. I'm very happy with it.
Okay, you mentioned about having to close the Gorge restaurant a couple of weeks early. Was this due to staffing needs or lack thereof?
Staffing becomes a pinch point as a lot of our staff had returned to school. So it certainly played a role, but not the only one. Through the season, and when you purchase a property, you begin to understand where investment is needed. The Gorge, the Floathouse restaurant there, of course, is called Floathouse because that building used to be on water. So we did find that it was best just to close a little bit earlier, and so we can start those renovations earlier. As soon as you start these things, the sooner you can open back up. So I think residents of Cortez will be delighted to see some changes at the Floathouse as we continue to do a deeper renovation than originally planned.
Okay, so that's in the works. And what about at the Wilderness Resort? What sort of changes do you envision out there, aside from maybe some programs?
There's a difference between what I envision and what the board will agree to me this year. But certainly, I think we have to address our room product there. We do intend to look at the furniture and fixtures. We were successful by putting a new dock in there this year, so guests are enjoying that and definitely a welcome addition. And then I'm really excited to be addressing this year some new programming, some new excursions based out of that resort, and some new ways to get more involved with the cultural immersion, which will continue to be a very strong part of that resort. So that's going to be one of the most exciting things, is to see the added programming for Clahoose Wilderness this year.
You were able to bring in a bunch of accommodation for staff in the form of RVs at the Gorge Harbor Marina Resort. Are the staff able to continue living in those year-round, or what do you see happening with that resource?
That's a great question. And that kind of speaks to the housing crisis that we see not only on Cortez, but everywhere else. And we did buy some RVs for the purposes of housing staff that are not from the immediate area. Living on site, though, is contingent on employment. So there will be staff living in those trailers that are continuing to work year-round as we continue on with gas sales and the store stays open. Generally, the Gorge restaurant, the Floathouse there, is open and for less hours. It's not, obviously, right now. So any staff that are still working can benefit from the housing. One major thing, though, is this housing solution, and staff housing anywhere for that matter, is intended not as a permanent residence, so it's not your primary place of residence, but it is available for those that are joining us for the season or working year-round.
Rumors have been circulating on the island that Katzenwegisch plans to buy the Squirrel Cove Trading Company. Is that the case?
I certainly cannot confirm if we look at any specific property, but I can say that Squirrel Cove is of great importance to Clahoose First Nation. There's deep history with the land in that area, and so if there is opportunity, if there are opportunities that exist in that area, of course we'll take a look, and if it makes sense, take a look even further. But at this point, I can say that we have secured 14 acres just in Squirrel Cove, and we are planning on what that looks like, likely building up to RV and camping on that site, but yet to be determined and approved as well.
And just finally, Jason Johnson, what are you most looking forward to in 2023?
I think I'm really looking forward to a refined bear operation, and that is always something that brings people all kinds of joy, is to connect with the nature, and it's so important for our guides to be able to share stories. And so that is one. I would also say I'm really looking forward to the continued live music program at the Gorge, and that's not going to go anywhere, and it's what we're known for. Investment into repairs and technology, I think, is something that's always exciting as we grow. It's important to keep up on those things. Renos to the float houses, I've already mentioned, and of course that incredibly important programming that's coming to Clahoose Wilderness Resort for a continued cultural experience to people the world world over. And we had guests from all over the world come and learn about the Clahoose Nation and local area at that resort. And it was fantastic to see stories shared and long-lasting memories being made.
Greg Osoba, Cortez Island.
Hi, I'm Sarah Gouda in Halifax, Nova Scotia. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
Brunswick artist Sir Robert Lyon is working in his studio on an Alex Colville painting. He's not restoring the painting, but the frame of a Colville original. Colville used to be very specific about his frame, so now Robert Lyon is studying the frame and kind of channeling how Colville worked on them. Lyon was commissioned by the Owens Art Gallery director Emily Falvey to recreate a frame that has been missing since the 1980s. Falvey says Owens originally borrowed Alex Colville's painting Nude and Dummy from the New Brunswick Museum for an exhibition that opens October 29, called Room for One. Other artists featured in the exhibition include Mary Pratt, Elizabeth Kahn, and Andrea Mortson. More with Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick.
Local artist Robert Lyons started noticing and admiring the work of Alex Colville as a kid, leafing through art books. And these days, he's paying very close attention to Colville's style and technique, not so much when it comes to creating paintings, but more so when it comes to creating the frames that surround them. Lyons has been commissioned by the Owens Art Gallery to recreate a frame for a Colville painting it has borrowed for an upcoming exhibition. Here's Owens director and curator Emily Falvey to explain more.
We borrowed Alex Colville's painting Nude and Dummy from the New Brunswick Museum for an exhibition that opens on the 29th of October called Room for One. And when it came from the museum, it was in a frame that was added later. Something that's interesting is that Alex Colville made most of his own frames. So, but in this case, Nude and Dummy had been unframed probably, I think, maybe the 80s, I'm not sure, and then reframed in a different frame. So when we borrowed the painting, we wanted to know if we could basically do conservation, take the frame that wasn't the one that Colville made and replace it with one that looked like one of the ones that he would have made. So Jane Tisdale, the fine arts conservator, reached out to Rob because she knew he was an artist and that he made his own frames, and that she thought that was a really like nice parallel.
For Robert Lyons, the project is a challenge and a bit of a thrill.
It's pretty cool to be the age I'm at now, and actually here I am building a frame for an Alex Colville original, the stuff that I looked up to as a kid and everything.
Lyons is working in consultation with Owens conservator Jane Tisdale to make sure the frame is as close as possible to those Colville made at the time.
Just from an engineering perspective, like Colville made his own frames at the time, and he was very specific about making a frame to a painting. You know, a frame really is an extension of the work. So there was a very specific style that he was doing at that time. They sent me pictures and I went into the vault and looked at some of his work as well. And then they gave me measurements and specific angles. So there's like an engineering component of, okay, how do I, like, aside from the fact it's an Alex Colville original and everything, how do I build this frame to match up to what he would have been doing in the 60s. Obviously, materials were different at that time, you know, than they are now. How do you get the finish and everything else?
Lyons says that shortages in materials, especially a lack of available pine, has meant some workarounds were in order. And the oil paints that Colville would have used to finish his frames in the 1960s have been replaced by water-based paints. But Lyons enjoys the challenge.
I was kind of channeling Alex Colville. Like, it felt like he was in the studio and looking over my shoulder and, you know, kind of, no, that's not the way we do it. We do it this way. And, you know, his work is very particular, very clean, very precise. He took that same approach. It's a very clean line. Very nice angles, not ornate, not gaudy, anything like that. Just really clean. So that's kind of the point that I'm at now, is I've got the frame and the liner all built, and now I'm at the point of having to do the finish on it. There again, it's not just, oh, it's white paint, just slap white paint on it. It's some gradation that he did and blending that he did that I've had to kind of really look at his frames and study them and figure out, okay, how did he do that? So it's just, like I say, it's just been a really fun project to work on, completely random and out of the blue. You know, it's not like I was sitting there waiting to frame an Alex Colville.
If all goes as planned, Lyon's frame will be on view with Nude and Dummy starting at the end of the month, and then will remain part of the work from there on.
For the next 30, 40 years, my frame's going to be on an Alex Colville original, and I'll have played some small part in helping to exhibit his work and try and honor what it is that he was trying to represent.
Nude and Dummy is part of an exhibition opening October 29th at the Owens and curated by Emily Falvey.
It's called Room for One, and it's from our permanent collection. So it features work by Alex Colville, but also Elizabeth Cann, Rhoda Colville, who was a student here in Fine Arts, Alex Colville's wife, Christian McKeel, Andrea Mortensen, and Mary Pratt. And it sort of comes out of like how the sort of enduring inequalities of invisible labor were brought to the fore during COVID-19. And that includes care and domestic work. So the show explores that issue through these paintings that are in our collections and looking at the relationships between artists and our partners, their friends and families, and just domestic life in general. So Nude and Dummy is Rhoda modeled for that painting. Her activity as a model is also a creative form of creativity, and that there was like a creative relationship there.
Right.
That she supported Alex Colville's career in this way, and that it would be, you know, it's interesting to think about that.
So interesting. And yeah, that you've taken this very like au courant theme and you've drawn these works from different times, right?
Yes. Like it speaks to how long this has been an issue.
Please go to canada-info.ca for the full stories. And through our Periscope, we take a quick look at some of the stories our journalists have been working on this past week. The award-winning documentary film The Secret Marathon, telling the story of Zainab, the first woman in Afghanistan to run a marathon, was recently shown at the screening room in Kingston, Ontario. The film inspired the global run-walk event The Secret 3K. Karen Mosna spoke to Tara Williamson, National Race Director of The Secret 3K.
Watching the film today was a completely different experience than watching it the first time I did in 2020, since the Taliban takeover. Now more than ever, it's so important that we realize the struggles that Afghanistan women are facing. You know, the Secret 3K race tries to provide a safe space that's accessible and promotes equality. It's a global run-walk event. You can participate from anywhere in the world. We definitely have a virtual component. And then we have in-person marquee locations across Canada. Kingston is one of them. Kingston is actually one of the most attended marquee locations. So you can register online at thesecret3k.com. We raise funds for various charities. Our charity partners this year are Women for Women in Afghanistan, the Afghan Sports Trust, which is the same organization that puts on the Marathon of Afghanistan. Obviously, that's on hold right now, but they do other things related to promoting equity and sport for Afghan people. And 261 Fearless, that is an organization that is a global organization, and they just opened their first chapter in Canada.
The Secret 3K Run Walk is an event held annually during International Women's Week to promote equality. It started in 10 cities across Canada and has grown every year since. The sixth annual Secret 3K Run Walk will be held on March 8, 2023, International Women's Day. To Halifax, Nova Scotia, where Sarah Gouda reports that about 100 community members attended the Parker Street Food and Furniture Bank's annual drive. Community members stood in line to pick up coats, scarves, and mittens before the winter arrives. Here's Parker Street's communications director, Romaine Roden.
This is a bit surprising for us this year. We didn't expect this much turnout. Last year, we gave out at least 170 coats, and this year, we're expecting quite a lot more. And that is understandable because of the inflation rate that is affecting the country right now. And as you can see in the line, well, your listeners won't see this, but as you can see in the lines, we have a lot of mixed families. We have Assyrian families, people from the Black community here in Nova Scotia, and also from the African nation. So those are migrants and so on. This is the third year in running, and we hope to continue the good work in the communities. Our Christmas program is coming up, and we are trying to get as much donations in because we expect way more people than last year. Last year, we gave out at least 900 boxes in terms of the Christmas hamper program. But this year, we're expecting more than 1,000.
That's probably going to resonate all across the country in these difficult times. And in British Columbia, we learned from our journalist Lenny Taylor that the Cortes Island Community Foundation is partnering with the Community Foundations of Canada, the Equality Fund, and the Government of Canada to focus on local gender equality initiatives. According to the Community Foundations of Canada, the Fund for Gender Equality looks to support local initiatives in over 20 communities across the country. The fund builds on efforts to shift power to women, girls, two-spirit, and gender-diverse people, and will work towards a future grounded in justice and gender equality. Grants for up to $40,000 are awarded to local projects. Lonely Taylor is with Christina MacWilliam, the Cortes Island Community Foundation Board of Director member.
Organizations that are interested, maybe trying to figure out which part of what they do will fit. As in all grant writing, it's how to fit. But I do think that this is a fantastic opportunity for Cortes and for gender equality and for recognizing some areas that may need this extra support.
The full stories on canada-info.ca. That's it for us. Our collaborators this week, Craig Osoba, Erica Butler, Ed Halverson, Kareem Musna, Morgan Budden, Lonely Taylor, and Sarah Gouda. Our national coordinator, Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada in Ottawa. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassin. Nice to have you with us. Take care. See you next week.